We're moving forward in Eicha Lamentations. Eicha was compiled by the prophet Jeremiah, and we discussed that Jeremiah brought this years before the destruction. He brought it to the king and said to him, here, this is what's going to happen. And the king burned it, and then he added another chapter. Every chapter but one is written in the alphabetical order, and then he added a chapter that has three series of the Hebrew alphabets. We are up to Pasuk Hey, I think. Pasuk Zayin. So we're up to Pasuk Tet. No, we did up to Yud. Sorry, we're up to Yud Aleph. Okay, we're up to Pasuk Yud Aleph. And we're trying to cover ground in order to get a basic pshat. I'm trying to maintain a certain balance with the Medrash and the pshat. Chaim, I need you to shift a drop just for the camera, okay? Look, there's a camera up there behind you. Because I'm short, your head gets in the way. If you could shift to your right, that would be great. Thank you. Okay, so we're continuing Pasuk Yud Aleph. We're going to read it with traditional tune and translate. Kol ha'mahne nachim. We're in the first chapter, Pasuk Yud Aleph, the 11th verse. Mevakshim lechem, natenu machmadehem, be'ochel la'shiv nafesh. Her nation, and this is, we're talking about Jerusalem, and this is an interesting point that we are called the people of Jerusalem, Zionists. We're all people of Jerusalem. We're all the nation of Jerusalem. They're all sighing because they seek bread. Bread isn't necessarily bread. It means they're seeking food. They're hungry. They're dying of hunger. And they've given their most precious things for food because people were dying of hunger. Re'e Adonai ve'habita ki hayiti zolela. So if you're willing to give everything for food, so it seems like you're a glutton. We say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, look, we're willing to give anything for food. We became like gluttons. We were so hungry. Lo aleichem kol overei derech. I wish upon you, all who pass upon me, it should not come upon you. Habitu im yesh machov kemachovi asher onal li. Has anyone been as afflicted, as pained, as what's occurred, what's befallen me? Asher hoga Adonai biyom charonapo. That Hashem has broken me, that Hashem has given me sorrow in the day of Hashem's anger. Mimarom shalachesh be'atzmotai vayirdena. Hashem sent a fire from above and burnt me. Our sages say that when the enemies entered the temple, they couldn't figure out how to torch the temple. How do you torch stone? And then they saw angels coming down from heaven helping them, teaching them how to burn the temple down. So the fire came down from heaven, as our sages say, and this is also recorded in Josephus, that there were miracles that clearly indicated that Hashem had said, I want the temple destroyed. Josephus writes that an eerie thing happened towards the destruction of the second temple. The gates of the temple opened and they couldn't shut them. Something that never happened before. And everyone understood it was a sign. Hashem was saying, the enemy is welcome in. The temple was unfortunately also used as fortification. Part of the ornaments of the temple were arrows and bows. And there was Beitayar, Neshek Beitayar, the secret last stash of ammunition was in the temple, actually. Bottom line, the fact that the temple could not be properly fortified, that the gates swung open suddenly and could not be closed, everyone saw that as a sign. Josephus says there was another extraordinary sign in the heavens, that there was a shooting star or something, or a comet. There was something that was seen right over the temple, which also they understood was a sign that the destruction was imminent. So Hashem sent a fire from above, which burnt to the bone, and so they couldn't run away from that fire because it was like they were entrapped by it. Paras reshet liraglai heshivani achor. Hashem laid out a net, a trap to catch me, and so I went back into the flames. Nitanani shomema. He put me in a state that I was bound to be desolate. Kol hayom dava. And I'm weeping consistently. Sometimes a person cries, but then they have a certain respite. Sometimes they can catch their breath. They can calm down. No, I continued crying. And that's the story of Jewish history, where anytime we thought we could rest a little bit, suddenly we discover we have a new enemy, we have a new threat. Niskad ol pishai biyado. The weight of my transgressions became weighty in his hand, so to speak. Yistarego alu al tzavari hichshil kochi. The Navi describes as though our transgressions became like branches that started growing, a vine. You know how a vine climbs on something? So our transgressions were like a vine that was growing over us and grabbing us and wouldn't let go of us. That's the metaphor over here. Yistarigu, the branches branched out, and the vine, as it alu al tzavari, it slowly climbed up to my neck, hichshil kochi, and took away all my strength. Nitanani Adonai bidei lo uchal kum. Hashem gave me in the hands of an enemy against who I could not stand up. Sila cholabirai Adonai bekirbi. Hashem gave me in the hands of the enemy, and so even my brave warriors, my knights, they were trampled. Kara alai moed lishbo bachurai. It's as though Hashem designated a time to break the youngsters of Jerusalem. Gat darach Adonai livtulat bat Yehuda. Hashem trampled the virgin of Judea as though she were in a wine press. That's again a metaphor. In a wine press, as you step on the wine, on the grapes, so there's splattering of wine all over, and it piles up inside the wine press. So too, it's as though Hashem took us and put us in that wine press, and he was trampling us. And the metaphor here has dual meaning, because on the one end, the verse began by speaking about the brave warriors being trampled. On the other end, he concludes by talking about the Virgin of Judea. So if we were to take it as metaphor number one, so he's talking about the people of Judea that never suffered such a loss. Meaning, as we approached the destruction of the temple, the people refused to believe that the temple would be destroyed. The prophets kept warning. Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu kept warning. And the people never believed it could happen. You know, when Pearl Harbor was hit, so someone wrote that the United States lost its virginity. That until then, all their wars were fought abroad. They never thought that they'd have to defend themselves in their own territory. And the same theme repeated itself when 9/11 happened. People said, look, the United States always thought, who's going to come into our territory and fight us? And now they have to fight on their own territory. Well, going back in history, the Jewish people didn't believe anyone would get so far to the temple. The Ribon Shalom would let such thing happen. And here Hashem says, no, no, no. I warned you, now I'm going to do it. And that's again, going with the first metaphor, that's why it's called the Virgin of Judea. Our sages say that there were thousands of girls who were virgins, who were raped at the entrance to Jerusalem, and there was a stream of blood, and that's the metaphor here. That's got like one who steps on a wine press, and there's a stream of wine coming out from the grapes. That's how the virgins were raped at the entrance to Judea. Aleine ani vochia. Over these I weep. Eini. Eini yored hamayim. כי רחק ממני. Menachem, meshiv nafshi. So Jerusalem says, over these terrible occurrences, over these terrible acts that were done to me, I weep and I weep again, and I my eye doesn't stop tearing because no one can comfort me. Hayu vanai shomimim ki gavar oyev. And even after my children were exiled, they did not find peace. And this is the story of Jewish history. Every other nation, when they're exiled, so eventually they try to become a part of that society and they're accepted. The Jews, constant persecution. I had a Russian friend who told me the only reason he knew he was Jewish was because the Russians kept telling him he was Jewish. Anytime he tried to sign up for something, the government would say, oh, you have a great-grandfather who's Jewish. So they forced him to remember he was Jewish, because wherever he went, they persecuted him for being a Jew. The Megillah says, Ayuvanai shomimim, ki gavar oyev, even in exile, the enemy kept persecuting them, and so my children were desolate even in exile. Peres HaTzion b'yadeha. Zion, our capital, spread out its hand, begging for mercy. Ein menachem la. But no one has mercy over Zion. And that again is the story of Jewish history. The Polish rabbi was asked to apologize when he spoke about, in a certain way about the SS men, and he said to them, I was there when a mother was standing in line with her baby, and she leaned forward to an SS man who took a drink from his canteen, and she said, my baby's dying of thirst, can you give him something to drink? And the SS man looked at her, looked at the baby, picked up his gun, and bashed the baby's head with the butt of his gun, and the baby was dead. He said, that's what I saw, so I have nothing to apologize for. The Navi describes that even as we turned and asked for mercy, even as Jerusalem begged for mercy, Ein Menachem La, she found no one who had a sympathetic ear. When Yasser Arafat took off his shoe, pulled out a gun, and said in the UN that he wants to annihilate the Jewish people, he was applauded. No one stood up and said, hey, that's not a way to talk about the Jewish people. Our history is that people can make claims against us, but it's rare that we find someone who's willing to be merciful to the Jewish people. You know, Nixon was an exception, by the way. One of the friends of the Jews was a president that doesn't have such a good reputation, Nixon. So Zion extends her hands and Ein Menachem La. And even though she begs for mercy, no one will have mercy over her. Why? Siva Adonai LeYaakov Sivivav Tzarav. Because Hashem commanded that the enemies surround Jacob. It's not a coincidence that we're in this land. Hashem could have put us in Madagascar. When Herzl was wondering where the Jewish state should be. So, you know, it would have been much more peaceful to be in Madagascar. We'd be far out. Whoever hears of what's going on in Madagascar, do you know what language they talk in Madagascar? But no, we have to be in Eretz Canaan on the trade route, connecting all the continents, and we're in the middle of everything. You ask the average non-Jew, how many Jews are there in the world? So this is, I don't know, 30%, 20%. How much do we make up of the world? Yeah, but how many UN resolutions are about us? How many times do we hit the New York Times? Do you have a week that we're not in the news? Why is Netanyahu on the front page so many times? He's the prime minister of such a small country. I don't see the Indian prime minister, and he's got a much bigger country, on the news. You don't even know his name. And Netanyahu gets known by his nickname, Bibi. Gee, why? Hashem commanded us to be in the state where we're in the middle of everything. We're supposed to be there. Hayeta Yerushalayim lenida beinehem. But everyone looks at us and says, look at how defiled they are. Jerusalem was considered a woman who's at her onset, where everyone kept the distance. They said, ugh, tzadiku Adonai kifiu mariti. This is a key pasuk in this chapter. In this pasuk, the Jewish people are saying, Hashem is just. We're weeping over our lot, but we're declaring Hashem is just. We rebelled against what He commanded us. Shimuna cholamim. And so we turn to the nations and say, listen, you see my pain? You see that even my children, my young men and young women, were taken into captivity? Well, that all goes back to Fihu Mariti. I rebelled. I started this. Karati. That's a big line, by the way. You know, one of the kids once came and said, it all started when he hit me back. And it sounds funny, but we all say that line. You know, we might not word it that way, but we say, it started when he hit me back. I just did this, and then he did that to me. But I only did this. We have excuses. The ability to say, no, I started. I'm in the wrong. That takes greatness, and sometimes we don't have that greatness. Karati lam ahavai, hey marimuni. My neighbors, I thought they loved me. We had such a relationship. We used to do business. I thought maybe they'd give me good advice. On the contrary, they deceived me. Kohanayus kenai ba'ir gavahu. Why did I turn to them? Because my own leaders were dead. My priests, my elders, they were supposed to give me counsel, but they had all died in the city, died of famine. Kivikshu ochel lamo. And so they were seeking food, and that's how they lost their lives, and that's why I'm left with only my youngsters, and even they, we said in the previous pasuk, they were taken into captivity. And the Navi is giving a description. What happened at the destruction of the temple? We were left with a very young generation of the Jewish people. Anyone older died, and that's very similar to what happened in the Holocaust. Rabbi Tender once said to me, he said, where Hitler succeeded was in making a breach in our tradition. I was once at a wedding ceremony, and I took advantage of it. I went over to Rabbi Tendler, who was also there as a guest, and I started asking him things about how the rabbi was officiating the wedding. Things that weren't critical in halacha, things that I was curious as to how his father-in-law, Rabbi Feinstein, used to officiate a wedding ceremony. And I asked him question one, question two, question three, and finally he looks up at me and he says, you see, this is where Hitler succeeded. Where you're asking me these questions about tradition. And the reason you're asking me is because you never got to see an old rabbi officiating a wedding. So you're double-checking. You're asking me, and do we do it this way? Do we do it that way? Part of what I was asking is because there's a different custom in Chutz Lartz as opposed to Israel. There are many things that are done differently there. Even the ksuba in Chutz Lartz is written differently than here. For example, here they're going to ask you, what number do you want to put into the ksuba? How much do you want to write for your wife? And in Chutz Lartz, they don't ask you such a question. It's all pre-written. So there are differences. But that's what happened at the destruction of the first temple. Anyone who was of an older age died. They just couldn't stand the suffering, the hunger. And whoever was left, the youngsters, were taken into captivity. Pasuk Chaf. The difference, by the way, is that in the first temple, 18 years prior to the destruction, the elders and the wise men were exiled into Babylon. So you had a situation where the rabbis were actually already in Babylon. And by the time everyone else was exiled, you had shuls and schools and everything was set up already. Re'ei Adonai Kitzali Me'ai Chomar Maru. And so we yell out to Hashem and we confess. It's as though our innards have been scorched by a flame. Nepach libi bikirbi. My heart turns over within. Kimaro mariti. Because I know it's my fault. I know it's my rebellion that brought this all upon me. Michutz shikel acheriv babayit kamavet. As I see outside, the enemy is killing right and left. Shikela can mean to kill. Shikela could also mean to cause parents to lose their children. A parent that loses their child, like Rebecca says, So it's a parent that loses their child. So she, the people of Israel says, I know inside there's the fear of death of a famine. Outside there's the fear of death of the sword of the enemy. You know, in the time of the Second Temple, there was such a famine going on that people would break into one another's houses and say, you look too healthy. You must have food. Where are you hiding it from everyone else? And people would kill one another searching for food. Shame'u ki nenachani. All those friends who I thought I had heard me sighing. Ein menachem li, and no one was there to comfort me. Kolo yevai, all my enemies, shame'u ha'ati sasu, when they heard me yell, when they heard me suffer, they were happy. Ki ata asita, because you caused all of this to happen. You caused me to suffer, you caused them to be happy. Heveta yom karata v'yiyuchamoni. But I wait for your day, Hashem, when they will be like me. Tavo cholratam lefanecha ve'olel lamo. See all their evil, Hashem, and do unto them kasher olalta. As you've done unto me, li al kol pesha'ai, even though I deserved it. Ki rabot anchotai v'libi davai, because I sigh so much, and my heart is so enveloped in sorrow. Now, when the Navi repeatedly says, I sigh, so the Talmud says, anacha shoveret chatzi gufo shel adam. The Talmud recommends not to sigh. The Talmud says, when you sigh, you're destroying yourself. It causes half your body to break. So it's one thing to suffer, it's another thing to sigh. When you go, ah. So that's already, that's self-destructive. So with that, we finished the first chapter. Notice how the first chapter ends on an up note. Where we're saying, Hashem, pay him back. I know you're going to pay them back, and I'm waiting for you to pay them back. And that's the conclusion of the first chapter.